The Six Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, good morning, Portland, Oregon. It's a beautiful day. We're going to enjoy a nice summer day in the 80s. And in studio with me this morning is my co-host, Carl Jepson with the Warren Island Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck. It is a beautiful day, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Great day. We've had a great week. We're going to have another couple of weeks, great weeks, supposedly.
This is why we live in Oregon.
That's right. Yeah, sun always shines. Kevin Stege's out doing a little vacationing, and so we will have his segment. We'll talk a little bit about taxes. But the main thing is I want to say that if you have a question today, pick up that phone and give us a call. You can call 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Or toll-free 800-990-0750. That's 1-800-990-0750. And just a heads up, we are going through some changes on our website, and I'm making a lot of changes on pfgwm.com. And so for the moment, we don't have our previous radio shows on there. They'll be being added, and the radio part will be added onto the website. So for right now, I don't have them on there yet, but they are being posted here in the next week, I hope.
You know, so, I understand there's some Cover Oregon guys that are looking for work that on websites and stuff.
I don't think I want to hire those guys. Yeah, I don't think I want to hire those guys. Well, I got to tell you, Carl, there's been a lot of excitement going on in the stock market.
Indeed.
You know, one day we're down over 300 points. For the week, we're negative. And what a lot of people don't realize is I kind of had a laugh the other day because when I heard the president came out, and it's almost the kiss of death to politicians. And I got to say this to all politicians. Be careful on boasting about how well you're doing and about the markets, because it'll invariably come back and bite you right in the rear, and it'll make you look really stupid. And you don't want to come out and say the economy's really turned the corner, the economy's really taken off, when it really hasn't, because it's almost for sure going to kick you right in the face. And, you know, with Obama coming out saying that the economy's turning around and all these great numbers, the real numbers on unemployment, and we've discussed this on the show, and Harry Dent discussed it on the show with us, it's so many people now are working part-time jobs. Many more people are working two and three jobs to make a living. The jobs in this country, the average earnings of an employee is less than they were 5 years ago. That is not a roaring economy, and I don't care what they say. And I'm going to tell you, what happened in the market this past week is nothing to what's coming. It's nothing. And I will say this. I after hearing all this stuff and hearing the reports, I just caution all politicians, don't go out and use the market as your way of saying, because nobody knows what the market's going to do, and it'll bite you every time.
Well, you know what's so interesting? The 300 points drop, what is that in as a percentage of the whole? What is that? Is that, you know, it's a relatively small.
Yeah, but it's generally speaking, depending if it's the Dow or the S&P. Mm. If it's the S&P, you know, it might be, it's just a little over 1%. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a lot.
No, but know? I mean, but it just shows you how dramatically it can drop. I think that's what's, if there's a lesson in it, it's like, you know, guess what? This can change overnight.
And, yeah. Just for example, you know, in looking at, speaking about that, the S&P closed at 1925. It was down 5.52. Now, that's 29 basis points. Mm-hmm. So four times that. is a percent.
Yeah.
You know, so that's only 20 points. So 300, if it was in the S&P, would be astronomical. In the Dow, the Dow sitting at 1469, the Dow's at 16,493. When it went down 69 points, that's 0.42. So you figure 69 times 270, that's 1%, so a little over 2%, almost 3% in the Dow. That's a pretty big move. Remember, we've talked about here on the show, when you see the markets fluctuating by over 1% to 1.5% or more on any given time, that's a very, very volatile market. That's a market when you better be real careful, because it can go one way or the other. And if unfortunately you're investing money that you can't afford to lose, that's not the time to do it. So that's speaking about that. That just gives me a great intro into my stock market. The Dow Jones closed at 16,493. It was down 69.93, which is 0.42%, a little less than 0.5%. But here's the real important thing of what's going on in the economy. And this economy, I've been saying for years on the radio, this thing started in a long-term bear market back in 99, back at the end of 99, right at the start of 2000, and we've been in this thing for 13 years. And I don't care what the economists say, except for maybe Harry Dent, because I think he kind of agrees with what I've been saying here. But the thing is, when you look at the Dow Jones, if we go back to when the market crashed on 10/9/07, the Dow stood at 14,164.53. So in that 6 years and 9 3/4 months, we are only up 6.44% or 2.41% per year. So if you're only up 2% a year, imagine what happens when the market moves by 2% in a day. That's a movement, folks. That's volatility. Yeah. When it moves enough in one day, that's equivalent to a whole year's return. That's a lot of movement. Nobody's talking about this on TV. Nobody talks about it in the financial shows. It just drives me nuts that nobody's saying, hey, the economy has changed. We are in a different environment. And, you know, they always say, you know, hey, we've seen this movie before. I got news for you. We ain't seen this movie before. We've never seen this. We've never had this situation in our economy ever. And you go back, I don't care how far you want to go back, we've not seen this kind of a market. The Dow closed on 12/31/99 at 11,497.12. So we're only up 43.46% in 13 years and 7 months. That's an average of 3.2. And we're talking about a Dow Jones that averaged close to 10% for the 80 years before.
You know, it's really a substantial difference, and it seems to be persistent.
You know, we got a caller on the line, and I could do a little drum roll here, but it's a special caller. It's Kevin. Kevin, are you back in town?
Hey, hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Welcome back.
Are you still on the road, or are you back?
No, we're back. We got back fairly late, but I figure I should at least join the conversation a little bit and not leave you guys hanging for too many weeks on your own.
Well, you know, Kevin, I was all ready this week. In fact, I brought in my my monthly newsletter. I was going to discuss the top 10 tax breaks you'll miss in 2014.
Oh, that sounds like you've got it all covered. Why don't I just leave you guys?
Well, no, you're welcome to stay and chat with us. We enjoy it.
Well, sounds good. Well, sounds like you're right on track this week, even from traveling around, you've kind of got to have an eye on what's going on in the markets and around the world. Boy, it just seems like we've got some things going on here, don't we?
Well, listen, did you have a great trip?
Yes, we sure did. First time I've got to visit Yellowstone and Old Faithful. You can't go wrong with visiting this good old country of ours.
It's a beautiful country, isn't it?
It sure is. Very good. We had a road trip and made it through Colorado and even some of the expanse of Nevada, but it's all pretty when when you're getting out there, so for sure.
Now, I just got to know, you were driving through Colorado. Was the air clear or was it full of smoke?
Well, you know, we did go through the mountains, and there was some talk about seeing, you know, the Rocky Mountain High, but it was all clear for us while we were there. So
okay, good.
So you felt the same coming in and out of the mountains?
We did. Yeah, we okay. did. It was yeah.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it's great that you called in. You want to stay on a little while with us, or do you want to give a little? You want to give a little dissertation here, and we'll do.
Well, I can just join the conversation from here. I think I've got a few things to go over on the tax investigator, and we can just do that in its normal course. So
okay, well, great. That's great. So listen, if you want to, we got Kevin on board. Then, if you want to call in and ask a question of Carl, Kevin, or Chuck, you can call us at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. So we're going to just continue on with the market report here. And I believe I got to the Dow Jones, and now we're going to talk about the, if I can find my notes here, I'm going to talk about the S&P 500. Like I mentioned, over the last 13 years and 7 months, the Dow is only up 3.2% per year. So a movement of 3% in a day is pretty dramatic. The S&P closed at 1925.15, down 5.52 or 0.29%. Now, where do we stand on the S&P in the all-time high close on 10907? At that time, was all-time high. We've since went past that all-time high of 1565. Well, that's 23% in 6 years and 9 3/4 months, or 3.38% per year, which, again, you've got an index that's averaged the 80 years before the turn of the century, over a 10% return. The S&P closed on 12/31/99 at 1469.25. It's up 31.03 for 13 years and 7 months, or 2.28%. I have to tell you, When you've got an S&P 500, the 500 growth stocks in America, is averaging 2.28% for the new century, for 13 years and 7 months, and the Dow Jones, the 30 biggest stocks we have, they're up 3.2%. That just tells you how upside down this country is. You got the old stable stocks are chugging along at a 3% return. You got the growth stocks, which growth is what drives this country, is growth. Our growth stocks are down almost 34% more than the big old sluggish stocks. It doesn't make sense. Usually they're up 20% more. So
you know, it's kind of reflective of this is that I used to work for General Electric, and so I have a handful of stock, like four or five of them. And they're still sitting around, and I get dividends on those, and I get my quarterly dividend of $1.76. So I'm going to be retiring soon.
Well, what you need to do is to make those stocks kind of like rabbits.
Have
them grow a little
bit.
Keep putting money into them. And I don't have a problem with individual stocks. If you're a person who likes individual stocks and you want to buy individual stocks, I say more power to you. I personally am not a stock picker. I believe more in managing people's serious money, and that's one of the things we talk to our clients about. We have a lot of clients. We manage their serious money and their money. They have guaranteed income money that they don't want to lose. But on their risky money, if they want to risk, I'll help them set up a TD Ameritrade or a Charles Schwab account or a trading account, and they can go trade all they want. I'm just not going to be responsible for their trading. Because I've done it myself, not as successfully as I want to do it myself, and I just discovered that I'm not a stock trader. Now, some people are really good at it, and I applaud those people who are really good at it. But I've never met anybody who was really good at it. I've had a lot of people tell me how great they thought they were at it, but then when I asked to check their tax returns and look at the last 5 years, what they really done, they're not too forthcoming on that, because most people find out that if you play and you gamble, you end up losing usually more than you end up winning. So it's just a fact of life. But listen, I'm going to talk to you about some things here. As I mentioned, my website is changing, and you will be able to go on there and find information. I also have another website called AskTheFinancialDoctor.com, and you can go on that, and you can email us questions that you may have, financial questions you may have, and we will answer them back. We'll either answer them on the show, or we'll answer them back with an email to you, but we will answer them to you. And the same thing here on the show. If you can't call in or you're too shy to call in and you want to email us, you can send me an email to askchuck@pfgwm.com or just chuck@pfgwm.com, and we'll answer the question. And you can also contact Carl or Kevin and call them at their office. Or you could just call today. And by the way, anybody calling in today, if you ask us a question, I will give you a free copy of Harry Dent's book called The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014-2019. And I highly recommend you read this book because it outlays a little bit of the future for you. And whether you agree or disagree with it, take a look at it. And I believe strongly that knowledge is power. And if somebody's laying something out there for you that can show you, you might want to listen, because it is your money. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break and come back with Carl's comments. But again, if you've got a question, pick up the phone and give us a call. 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Or toll-free 800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. We'll be right back with Carl's comments.
Do Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation, or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back. Carl Jepson. And we're back on live here today. And this is Carl's comments. I've been out of the office this entire last week. So it's a kind of an interesting experience. Series of topics. And so anyway, you've heard me do these 10 best or 10 worst or 10 things to talk about. And so today I have the 10 most frustrating and upsetting lawsuits. And I don't take credit for their particular order necessarily, but it is certainly one of those things that people find frustrating are probably all lawsuits, I suppose. But in talking with various clients and people who, you know, a lot of times in casual conversations, people will, if they know that you're a lawyer, they'll say, you know, this lawsuit or that lawsuit, and they're pretty, you know, pretty mad about it, pretty upset about it. And so over the years, I've kind of concluded that there are some that are just generally worse than others. Not, this is not universal necessarily, but so I'm going to start with the top 10 and kind of tell you, or at least in my view, the top 10. And they are, like I said, I'm sure that you could substitute your own for it, but and maybe explain a little bit why they are so darn frustrating and all that kind of thing. So number 10, landlord-tenant disputes. And if you're a landlord and you haven't experienced a landlord-tenant dispute, then you are really lucky. And likewise, I think if you're a tenant and you've never had to be in a fight with the law with the landlord, you're also very, very lucky. So if you're happy with your landlord or you're happy with your tenant, you know, don't do anything. Just stay there. Because you got to remember, this is talking about a person's home if they're the tenant, and or if you own the property, it might be your retirement and, you know, income. It might be, you know, something that you are looking for as your investment, or maybe it's, you know, just something that you're trying to hold on to until you're going to use it for, you know, your retiring mother and father. So either way, it's an important subject. The landlord-tenant law tends to be extremely technical and extremely precise and absolutely not intuitive. So we often talk about it in the firm, and we often say that the nice guy who's a landlord finishes last. And, you know, we don't encourage people to be bad guys, but a lot of times people unwittingly make mistakes in the landlord-tenant law because they're trying to be flexible. They're trying to be reasonable. And if you're flexible and reasonable, but you don't still follow the absolute strict letter of the law in landlord-tenant law, it ends up costing you money. More often than not, that comes up in the eviction standpoint where the well-meaning landlord who hasn't been paid rent for quite a while and has been given a lot of slack ends up giving some kind of wrong notice. And then the disputes can go on from there, what they call habitability disputes, where the tenant claims that there are big, bad problems with the nature and the condition of the property, and the landlord won't do anything about it and wants damages for that. And the landlord says, yeah, but I fixed all of that stuff. And that doesn't sound like a major thing, but it becomes a real big deal once you get into court. And the landlord-tenant law makes it such that the loser often pays the other's attorney's fees. So that gets to be a real messy thing. So that's one of those areas. If you have a landlord dispute or a tenant dispute, you need to consult with a landlord lawyer or a tenant lawyer, depending on which side you're on, because it is very technical. Don't think you know the answer, because you probably don't. And I can tell you that most lawyers, I always turn away those things. I used to know a little bit about that, but anymore, I send those to the other partners in my firm and the other lawyers in my firm who do that work, because it is really technical, and you got to dot your I's and cross your T's.
As I heard from a wise attorney, common sense has nothing to do with it.
Absolutely not. No, it's a set of rules that are, you know, it's kind of like so many statutory schemes. They may have been well-intentioned, but they've kind of gotten out of hand a little bit, I suppose. And they're enforced differently somewhat, depending on which county you're in. No, I'm not kidding you. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, where there's a discretionary part of the judge's decision kind of thing, you know, there are some counties that are more landlord-oriented and some counties that are much more tenant-oriented. So it's kind of an interesting thing. So number 10 was landlord-tenant. Number 9 is code enforcement disputes with cities and counties, or, you know, zoning, building, those kinds of things. I can tell you that these can be extraordinarily frustrating. And here's the way they usually go. You may be asking to do something, or they may be telling you to stop doing something. Just doesn't really matter. But a lot of times what will happen is the city will say, do 1, 2, and 3, and you'll be fine. And you go out and you do 1, 2, and 3, and you go back with a smile in hand and your little list. You've checked off 1, 2, and 3. And now this time you get clerk number 5. Last time you had clerk number 1. Now you get clerk number 5, and you say, here's my 1, 2, and 3. Give me my permit. And they say, oh, that's really great. But did you know that you now have to have 3 and 4?
You know, are they trained by the same people that train the IRS?
Well, I don't know, maybe. And sometimes they're trained by the same people that work in the front desk at the bank, but, you know, so same thing, you know, I mean, it's kind of the, but so, either way, yeah. And this can go on and on and on. And quite frankly, if you get crosswise with the city, you know, the old adage, you can't, don't, you know, sue City Hall, you know, well, that's, kind of true in a way, because I'll give you a classic case of that. There was a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. It's called Dolan, the Dolan case. And this had to do with a desire to remodel the premises, build a parking lot and things like this for an electrical store. And in the Dolan case, the city of Tigard, it was, said, oh, that's okay, you can do all that stuff. But by the way, you got to build us a bike path. And it's got to go here and there, and it's going to cost you, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Before we'll give you the permit to build the other stuff that is perfectly lawful to do. But you got to do this for us. And the Dolan guy says, hey, that's crazy. I'm not doing that. Anyway, the long and the short of it is that they went all the way to the Supreme Court. Cost them well over $100,000. And then they won. Wow, you know, what a neat thing. But that's not the end of the story, as you know, Paul Harvey would say. The end of the story is that the Supreme Court said, yeah, the city screwed up. They should have done 1, 2, and 3, and 4 before they did this. So the city goes back, starts over, and says, number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4, and complied with all of those conditions, and they made them do it anyway. So there's an old, you know, so the old adage is don't try to fight with City Hall, and in general that's a good
and like
good
tugging on Superman's cape.
Yeah, huh? Yes, that's right. Yeah. No. So so anyway, that's number 9. Number 8, any kind of financial elder abuse, that's it's just because they're nasty. You know, it usually ends up being one family member against another, and they're saying, you know, that brother or sister or somebody ripped off mom or dad or something like that. No matter what you do, it's a bad subject, and quite frankly, those children who do it are those people who prey upon the elderly. You know, there's a I'm sure that they have an eternal resting place. Number 7, construction disputes. If you've ever had to build, have to work on any kind of project that's a construction project. There are always things that go wrong. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. And there are always changes. And this is the kind of thing that really gives rise to dispute. Most construction contracts have a provision that says, if you're going to change something, you know, you want to change something that's going to cost more money, you have to put it in writing. And that sounds really easy. But the problem is the way that construction is done with subcontractors and everything, and they're trying to time their business so that they can come in and get the drywall guy just right after the electrician guy, and then you get the floor guy, and you get the roof guy, and you get all these other guys, and they have to be kind of timed at the right time. Well, what happens is, you find this situation, and the owner says, the contractor usually finds something that's a discrepancy or something they don't like or whatever. They come in and they say, or the owner doesn't. The owner says, ooh, that color just really is awful. That's not what I wanted. And the contractor said, well, that's what you ordered, but do you want to change that? In fact, let's change it to a whole different sort of substance. And the contractor says, well, that's probably going to cost you a little more. And the owner says, yeah, that's okay. And nobody writes it down. Nobody signs a change order. They just do it, okay? Well, and they might do, and then this habit happens that they end up doing it this way. It's really easy. They don't want to write it down. They're out there in the middle of the, you know, in the rain or whatever, and standing around writing on a notepad, they don't write down the change order. So the next thing you know, there's a bunch of change orders with a bunch of extra money, and then they find out that maybe the owner says, hey, this guy's really screwing up. He's really not doing this job at all very well. He ends up, you know, filing a suit or he says, I'm not paying you, I'm firing you, you know. And the contractor comes back and says, wait a minute, you know, you never said there was anything wrong with this. Let me fix it. And then the guy says, well, I don't trust you because, you know, you've screwed all this other stuff up. And the next thing you know, they're in this big dispute. And it always ends up kind of like this. The owner says, contractor screwed it all up, so I fired him. And the contractor says, look, I might have made a mistake, but he made a whole lot of change orders that cost me a whole lot of extra money, and now he doesn't want to pay for them. So, and then you end up in this lawsuit with a bunch of lawyers who stare at each other across the table with, you know, legal pads and calculators and a whole big list of punch list of stuff. And it's very expensive and it's very costly and very upsetting and nobody wins. So, you know, that's why it's very difficult. So if I were you in building and construction, you have to be on top of it all of the time. And you have to be making sure that you're in constant communication with your contractor. Vice versa, the contractor needs to be in constant communication with the owner or the person who's, you know, managing the construction. Because if not, That failure of communication will almost always give rise to a lawsuit. And there are many lawyers who make a very good living doing lawsuits of that sort. So that's number seven.
Well, you know, you got to communicate with each other. And I got to say, we did some construction. We did some remodeling. And it's kind of funny when you were mentioning that, because my contractor was really good when we were in Hawaii for a couple of weeks. And we got out of the house because they were tearing out a wall, and we wanted to be out of there because all the crap and stuff. So we timed a vacation with the remodel job. And he would send me pictures, and they put the door in the wrong place where I wanted the door. And so I had to contact him, thank goodness, you know, for the internet, because we got the picture. And when I saw the picture, I thought, oh, crap. So I got back to him. I said, hey, we discussed putting the door, you know, over, and it made a substantial difference to the doors we were putting in, and the cabinets running, because there was going to be a space there of 12 inches of nothing. And so I sent it back, and I said, hey, remember he was very, very good. I got to give him credit. He come back and he said, well, we already put it in. And I said, yeah, but you got to take it out. And he did. He pulled it out, and he sent me back a note, and he said, you're right. I went back and looked at what we discussed and what you signed, and you had put a note there about moving it over to the side because you want the cabinet to go all the way to the wall. And I said, you got it. And so he did it. And
you had a very good way of communicating in that sense, because, yep. But a lot of times you don't discover till it's all done, and maybe it can't be fixed by the time you
get
it in.
Yeah, well, we were lucky because just did it, and they could take it out real easy. Yeah, and so it worked out good. Yeah. But it was a little tense there at first when we discussed it. But we did have it all in writing. We did discuss it. We had went through the plans totally, and his sub guys, because they all have subcontractors, had put it in the wrong spot.
Right.
And so it was very easy fix. They just moved it over, and everything was happy.
Yeah, good. Well, that's and you didn't have to go to any litigation. See,
so no.
Yeah, see, there's the whole thing about that. So, number six, trust will probate contest. Because of my particular area of law, for the most part, this one probably would be number one on my list. But in the overall scheme of things, I think it's six is a probably fairly accurate rating. And mostly because what you end up with are things like either you say that the trustee is or the personal representative is not doing his job, and they're really screwing around, they're trying to cheat me out of my money or whatever it is, or there's a fight over who gets what, particular personal property items. A lot of times there are personal property items that various family members have in their mind a claim to. And, you know, grandma told them that that they were going to get the grandfather clock or whatever it was, and or the you know, crystal doorknobs or any other number of things, or the 4-foot, you know, plastic Santa. Either way, there can be a disputed item, and it brings out a lot of what I found is a lot of times the fight isn't so much over the money. It usually has to do with the fact that the family member is now deceased, and so the siblings often have longstanding disagreements or feelings of hostility that have been kept under control by the watchful eye of their the parent, but now that's gone, and they let it all hang loose, and even though they're fighting over a specific item, the fight really has to do with their pent up anger with their sibling or whatever it is, and that's what makes those so difficult, because they don't get resolved on a reasonable basis necessarily, and a lot of times those require some real time spent on diffusing that underlying emotional aspect to it, the investment that's in it, rather than just saying forget about it, I'll give you the value of it or whatever. That never satisfies. It's you done me wrong, mom loved you better, and you got to get it fixed.
Yeah, smothers brothers.
Yeah. And so number six. Number five, boundary disputes. And number five and number four are kind of a lot alike. Boundary disputes often go with neighbor disputes. And I distinguish this. Boundary dispute alone means that you know, you've discovered that there's a variance and that you think you own 6 feet of the other guy's property or vice versa, one way or the other, something like that. And then you have the problem that in many places, the surveys are wrong, especially with rural property, not quite as much in, you know, platted and things like that, because they've been there a while and they're probably pretty well fixed. Not always, but mostly. But in a more rural setting, a lot of times these boundary disputes turn into really, really bad things. And so you get a surveyor, and then you get, and then the other guy gets a surveyor. Well, guess what? They don't agree with each other. So now you've got a battle of two surveyors, you know, doing this and that. And then you get people doing sort of retaliatory conduct, and it gets to be really, really messy. And people can become so incensed with the perceived intransigence of the other that they lose track of the site. You know, that, you know, I've seen people fight over a foot of dirt that makes absolutely no difference in the value of their property. But, you know, the fact that someone else is going to take 1 foot of their dirt just makes them nuts. And, you know, it's just an amazing thing. So there again, if you can avoid the confrontation and have the initial stages of communication stay with reasonable, you know, and work out something that both can live with, you're going to save yourselves a whole lot of money. So boundary disputes, bad. Neighbor disputes are an escalation of that. That's where, you know, you have the person who puts up the you know, the giant searchlight shining into your bedroom window, followed by the guy on the next door who has this car alarm thing that he doesn't like your light, so he sits there and he knows that you work nights, and so you're trying to sleep in the day, and he's off on disability, so he's sitting on his porch and he's going chirp 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 chirp, you know, all day long, driving you nuts. And then you don't like that very much, so you pitch a dead rat in his lawn, and the next thing you know, it really gets ugly. And so and you know, those are the things, you know. We try to save. This is the fundamental purpose of lawyers, is to avoid people getting shot. And, you know, these are the kind of things that go beyond that, where the neighbor ends up shooting the neighbor because they're just so mad at each other. And they're very hard to settle, because if the neighbor has it in for the other neighbor, they can always think of creative things to annoy them, and legal things that are, you know, they can perfectly right to do, but, you know, that nobody can do anything about. So a lot of people have to give up their pride and just swallow it and say, I'm just not dealing with this person, just as best you can. So anyway, but I also have a proverb, a legal proverb, one of my numerous legal proverbs, which says, if your neighbor is really crazy, move. And so
in a hurry.
There's number five. Yep. and number four. Number three, I guess it was. Anyway, number two is divorce. And that's pretty much a given, I think. And you'd think, well, why is divorce only number two? Well, because number one is divorce with custody disputes. And I can't think of anything that is actually more difficult and more challenging and more upsetting to both sides and to the lawyers than the very badly, hotly contested custody dispute. In fact, my last custody case that I ever tried was Christmas Eve, 1984. And that was a custody dispute, and I represented the father. We won, and which was kind of unusual in those days. And this is what drove me actually not only out of practicing divorce law, but out of the practice of law entirely for a period of a couple of years. And that was the mother walked up to my client and I in the hallway after the thing, and she looked at us with these cold eyes, and in the most chilling voice. If she'd have been a man, it would have sounded like Clint Eastwood. And she says, I wish you would die. And I said, ooh, ow. And so anyway, that's the last divorce case I ever handled. And so I think that's enough said about all those cases. There's no question in my mind that litigate and prosper really means the lawyers. And I think that if there's any way that you can reasonably settle your lawsuits. However, if things are likely to escalate into, you know, dangerous situations or you know, harmful situations, then that's what your choices are. That's why the rule of law is so important to our country. That's why our country, in fact, stays together a lot better than many places, because we do have mechanisms to enforce the law without resorting to violence. And that's why you should hug your lawyer. That's Carl's comments.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the tax investigator. If you have a question about that or any other comments, or you just want to call in and hug your lawyer, Call 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. We'll be right back with the tax investigator.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Well, you are listening to Investing Simplified. Are you there, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
Hello. Well, Carl, what a rousing segment you've got there. You spent some time. Those are the things movies are made of, I think.
Well, you know, there is. Particularly, there's a movie called Pacific Heights, and I forget the name of the actor. He's a fairly famous actor, and it's a landlord-tenant thing called Pacific Heights. And you should, if you want to see real nightmares, that's the one.
Very good. Well, you know, I have a friend who was a landlord, and they had a landlord-tenant dispute, and in the midst of it, they were contacted by Judge Joe Brown.
Asked
if they'd like to take their grievances on the air and settle it there, and fortunately, they decided that wasn't the route they wanted to go. So.
Well, Kevin, we've got a caller on line two. Rob has got a question about property bylaws question. And are you there, Rob?
Yes, I am. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
We moved into a property 3 years ago in an HOA, a small HOA. And the property was a short sale, so there was a HOA dues lien as well as property tax lien against the house when we bought it, and so both the HOA and the bank had to approve it, which they did. And then after we moved in, about a year later, the HOA approached us and told us that our fence was not in compliance with the bylaws. And we looked at the bylaws, and it was true. No one knows whether the bylaws came into existence before or after the fence was constructed, because the fence, there's no record of when the fence was built. But the whole system is pretty new. The HOA was formed in about 07, and the house was built in 06, and the bylaws weren't written up until much later. So it all happened in the last few years before we bought the property. Mm-hmm. So they're wanting us to remove our fence. And we have a very large property, so the cost to put in a compliant fence would be tens of thousands of dollars. So we're trying to work out something amicably with them and just, you know, explaining that we're trying to do the best we can, but we don't think we can take on a, you know, $50,000 project. And my question is whether they were obligated, when they had the opportunity to approve the sale, to notify us that we had a non-compliant fence or not. And then the second part question of that is, there are other properties in the development which have non-compliant fences, and we don't have any record that they've notified them. And also, there's no record that they indicated to the previous owners that the fence was not in compliance. So that's the question.
Okay, so your fence was built when you bought the house. I mean, it was already there.
That's right.
Okay. Well, the problem, this is like a law school examination, so forgive me. Everybody always teases me here on radio that I don't make things very simple, but I'm going to try. You know, the first thing you need to know, there's some concepts. First of all, when you buy real estate, they tend to impute to you the knowledge of anything that is of public record. And guess probably the HOA bylaws and things are recorded somewhere. And so that would be one strike kind of against you. But the problem you're also seeing here is that HOAs change over the years. You know, the makeup of, I mean, the people may change because they elect different people on an annual basis or whatever. And so the management of those things can be very, very inconsistent. And you may have, you know, the tyrant guy who's the board president who comes in and wants to enforce all the rules. And then other people who just say, you know, if it's not bothering anybody, who cares? And so, you know, you have a lot of inconsistency in all of that. However, I mean, I can certainly see your point that especially since it was there when you got it, the time to have done something about it, you would think, would be when they were building it. And somebody says, hey, you know, that thing's not right. But like you say, on the other hand, it may have been one of those situations where nobody noticed it till later and then said, well, it's just, you know, or who knows? You know, you never know how those things come up all of a sudden. It might be worthwhile, you know. Well, there are a number of lawyers who deal with a lot of homeowners associations, and I'm not, unfortunately, I'm not one of those people that has a lot of expertise in that. But I have actually filed lawsuits and defended lawsuits in homeowners associations or condo association disputes, and you know, I could put those on my list of, you know, put them on one of those, because that's kind of a boundary dispute in a funny sort of way. But it's very there's no easy answer to that. What is the compliance part of it that doesn't work? I mean, why is it that yours is not compliant?
It's the material it's made of. They want it to be
oh.
a certain type of materials, and it's not the right type of material. The part, I guess, I helpful for me to know that the bylaws are considered public information, most likely, and that's something I'm supposed to know. For future reference, I will make sure I read all those when I buy a property.
I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying you don't have a remedy. I guess the question is, you say it's a small homeowners association. I mean, the problem is that the first thing I would do, I think, is really I would get a copy of the Homeowners Association articles and sometimes they call them a declaration in a condominium association. The legal documents that get filed with the deed records which govern the creation and management of the association, and also they're supposed to maintain a current copy of those bylaws. Now, I will tell you this, that most homeowners associations are, you know, pretty lax in doing that, too. So I would look at those things very carefully, see if they're, you know, they may be blowing it out their ear as far as that's concerned. But then as soon as you have those things together, then what I would do is go ahead and if you wanted to give me a call at my office, I could give you some names of people who do that kind of work frequently. And then I don't have them at the top of my list, but I will know them if I can go look in my office and, you know, look at the names that I have a list of people that I sometimes refer people to. And it would be worth your while before you start a big fight or get into a big fight to have a lawyer review that situation and give you, you know, all of the kind of legal options that are involved, because you don't want to, you know, if it's going to cost you more to win than to, you know, to fix the fight, you know, to fix the fence. Although it sounds to me like that's a huge, huge proposition, and you really should at least spend a little bit of money making sure that you've analyzed it carefully. The other thing you need to figure out is how serious are they, because, you know, it may be that they don't want to spend the money either, because that comes out of everybody's pocket. And of course, unfortunately, yours. It comes
right
out of the association.
I find that very ironic. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, you know, that's the main thing there, is that, you know, in a sense, you're partly paying for their lawsuit against you if they do that. You know, I think that there are a lot of times that they might want to think, I mean, I can't imagine that your materials are so much different that it makes it, you know, stand out like a sore thumb somewhere, does it? I mean, I'm guessing not.
Well, you know, at least one person's opinion, it does. It is, you know, clearly not in compliance with the current bylaws. And, you know, and I don't dispute that. But the issue is, again, for me, the issue was this was a short sale with they had a special assessment against all the properties in the development for some other work. And this house being short sale, the owners hadn't paid it. So they were many thousands of dollars in arrears to the HOA before we bought it. And, I mean, my feeling was there was some incentive on their part to approve the sale and not disclose other issues because they wanted their back money. I mean,
$10,000. Yeah, you know what? And the problem you have here is that, I'll tell you, I don't think that there's a great deal of traction with the argument that they should have told you. Because first of all, they probably wouldn't have thought to do so. And I'm not entirely sure that they have a duty to do that. That, unfortunately, I think that falls on you to find out those things. I don't mean that as a criticism. It's just I think that's the way that the law would end up with.
Right.
So I would do those things. I think it's a difficult challenge, but I would spend some money with a lawyer who really knows that stuff before you go spend a bunch of money doing anything.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for all that information and advice.
You bet.
Thanks
for the
Rob. Call. We got another caller on the line. Don's got a question about a property line as well. Don, are you there?
Yes. I have a tree, and it is on the property line. The neighbor wants to take the tree out, wants me to pay half. I'm not sure I want to take the tree out. Do I have any rights?
Oh, boy. This is a very common problem, and it's right on the property line, I suppose. Like, the property line goes, like, right through the middle of it or
pretty close. I put the fence inside the tree. My fence has to be moved. I'm thinking it has to be resurveyed once that tree is out. But can I say no to them taking the tree out?
Well, is the tree partly on your property and partly on theirs?
Yes.
And everybody kind of agrees that's the case. Well, the problem is you have if the tree is a hazard, I suppose that's one thing. But if it's just because they want to take it out for some reason, that's a little different matter.
It shades their yard.
It saves their yard. Well, that's not really, you know, this is the stuff of which, you know, depending on how well the facts are presented, everything, it could go either way. But, and especially when it's right on the line, as a practical matter, there's a under old common law, it basically said that if you have a something that's encroaching on your property from the other side of your neighbor, you can self-help remove it. So a lot of times you see situations where people will cut off limbs of trees and things like that. But in this situation, you've got, how do you remove half a tree? So, but the corollary to that rule is, though, that if you do that at the same time and damage property that's on your client, on the other side, the person that's not removing it, well, then that person's responsible for damages. So, you know, I don't know that... That's why I'm not convinced that either one of you has the strongest thing here, because they're saying, well, gee, if we don't move this tree, our yard gets screwed up. And I assume that the roots are pushing up and stuff.
Their plants don't get enough sunlight.
Oh, well, I'm not sure that that's quite as exciting to me as, you know, they kind of knew that when they moved in, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's something that... that is going to have a lot of value, but I certainly wouldn't agree to. Quite frankly, if I were you, the first thing I would do is just give them some written notice. Just says, "Look, I don't agree with you. I'm sorry that you can't grow stuff there, but that's too bad. And you know, the tree's been there longer than any of us. And besides, the other, you know, I like the tree, by the way. And if you tear down the tree, I'm going to hold you responsible. And I'm not going to help you. You know, I'm not going to." You know, pay for it,
okay.
And then see what happens. They're going to probably get a lawyer, and you'll get a nasty note, and then you'll end up having to kind of really look at the case. And it's one of those deals that can be really intractable, though. So, you know, you have to worry about how much it's worth to you. So,
I understand that.
So anyway, like I said, those are very difficult questions, and I don't. envy of that situation, but I've had those lawsuits come into play. You might also see if you can get into a neighborhood mediation. There are various neighborhood associations or something looking to...
Tried that with them before. They would not mediate anything.
Oh, well... okay, well, that runs me out of remedies other than short of the law. So, like I said, this is just one of those things that is so difficult about these kinds of cases. So
just send them a certified letter and state.
Yeah, I just tell them that tell them that it's your tree too, and you don't have any responsibility to keep them out of the shade. I mean, that's just crazy. They have known that it's shady there for a long time. Put plants somewhere else or buy their produce at Fred Meyer. I don't know.
The tree is probably 70, 80, 90 years old.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. You might want to contact the local city or municipality and see if it's required to get a permit to do it, because I think they do.
Oh.
Well, listen, Don, we're going to have to go time, but thank you very much. Great question.
You bet.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Kevin, we've got just 30 seconds, so how does somebody get a hold of you?
We are at BakerColson.com, 503-666-5569. And as this segment reminds me of the old curse that says, may you be involved in litigation that's not your fault.
And Carl?
Yes, 503-255-8795. Be the Chinese curse being, may your life be filled with many lawyers.
Yeah, well, listen, thank you very much for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend.
We do Investing Simplified. Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management.